Hi everybody, welcome. I think people are going to be joining this seminar over the next few moments. So do come on in to our virtual room and make yourselves at home. I hope you've all got a cup of tea or something like that, and you're settling in for what is going to be a fantastic session. You'll see that there's a chat box and Q&A feature. So I'll be telling you more about that in a moment, but get familiar with that if you're already here. Welcome to those people still coming in. It's great to have you here. I can see the number of participants ticking up there, so I know people are still joining. It is great to have you with us. I think we are, oh yes, I think it's starting to tail off now. No, that's good. Right, okay, well, welcome everybody to this seminar at Multiply 2021. We hope you've had a fantastic morning. We have heard all sorts of different contexts and different things this morning. It's been absolutely fab. This is the Ancient and New seminar in the Mixed Ecology stream. So I hope that you're in the right place. If not, now is the time to go and find the one you're supposed to be part of. Before we begin, let me tell you a few practical things. We'll be recording this session and it will be available in the future to watch via the digital platform ccx.media. The only people visible will be the panelists and me. If you put a question in the question box, it won't be visible on the recording. And if we mention your questions, we'll only mention your first name, just so we're GDPR compliant. But please do use the chat section for chat and the Q&A feature for questions. We really, really welcome those. If your question is already in the question box, if somebody else has asked it, then do please like it to kind of upvote that question. And then it's more likely to be answered by our speakers sooner. And we would love to hear those questions. We might have more questions submitted than we're actually able to answer, but we will do our best. So yeah, please do put your questions in the chat. We really, really would love to hear those. And please do share in the Q&A box, sorry, questions in the Q&A box, but please do share anything you find interesting and informative in the chat box to continue the conversation there. We would love that. And then just a reminder as well that you can also share on social media. If you want to do so on Twitter, it's @TheGregoryCCX, and the hashtags are #MultiplyX2021 and #CCX. And you can continue the conversation on the Multiply Facebook group if you haven't already been part of that this morning. So as we come to our seminar, it would be great to do some introductions. I'm your host, Emily Hudgton. I lead a brand new church plant with my husband, Mark, in Wynyard in the northeast of England. And with me today, we have got our speaker, Ian Mobsby, and our panelists, Mark Berry and David McCarthy. And I'm going to hand over to them to introduce themselves now. They're going to give us just a 1 minute introduction and bio to give everybody a bit of an idea of their background. So, Ian, if you could go first and then Mark and David, that would be great.
Thanks, Emily. Yes, so I've been a pioneer for a very long time now, too long to say. I'm very much been involved in the kind of new monastic fresh expressions movement. Started off as a radical atheist and therefore really concerned about how we reach out to the unchurched. So, and I'm now in the Diocese of Southwark, just south of Blackfriars Bridge in central London.
Thank you so much. Mark, do you want to go next?
I'm a leader of a small community in Telford, in Shropshire, called Safe Space. That's been going for about 15, 16 years. It's a little new monastic community exploring a modern interpretation of Celtic spirituality and spending most of our time ministering with ex-offenders, addicts, those struggling with mental health and gangs and the like.
Amazing, Mark. Thank you so much. And David.
Yeah, I've been involved in developing new forms of church overseas in Spain and then in priority areas of deprivation in Scotland. And then until recently, I was the Church of Scotland development worker for Fresh Expressions of Church, which was just working across all of Scotland, but also linking up with Fresh Expressions UK.
Fantastic. Guys, we have got some just amazing experience in the room. So I'm really excited for what we're going to learn today. To give you a kind of a flavor of what to expect over the next half an hour or so, we're going to start our time by hearing from Ian. He's going to share some of his experience and expertise with us, and then we'll hear some responses from David and Mark before moving on to conversation and questions. Don't forget, delegates, we would love to hear from you. So please submit any questions via the question box. And don't forget to like any you particularly want to hear the answer to. And feel free to submit those at any point. So, Ian, let me hand over to you and let's hear what you have to say for us.
Great. Thanks, Emily. So hopefully you can see that. So I want to look at this whole thing about how do we develop a mixed ecology drawing on this ancient and new. So I really want to think about church history and us, how can we as pioneers draw on the inspiration of what's come before to inform us in our present. And I think we've just, let's just honor the tradition here. We come here as different types of pioneers. And I want you just to honor that. The sense that some of us are very contextually mission-based and very concerned around being pioneer adapters or pioneer innovators. Some of us are coming from much from a church planting perspective as church replicators. And some of us are being real activist social entrepreneurs. And I think we come with different hats, but we can learn when we look back to church history to inform our present. I think all of us have got the challenge, and I think this is the key phrase I want to hold for this seminar. How do we, drawing on the past to inform the present, build ecclesial communities out of contextual mission? And so as someone who's really been involved in four different fresh expressions now, this process, I think, is really key for those of us who are contextually focused. And we remember that that first model of fresh expressions wasn't new. If you look at the Franciscans, they basically responded to a crisis in Central Europe in the medieval period and then spread across the whole of Europe. When the church was weak, it was the Friars Minor, the Franciscans, who rebuilt the church, going to places where the church was weak to evangelize and live a radical rhythm of Christianity. So I think some of our fresh expressions approaches draws on the Franciscan. For those who are kind of more church planters, church replicators, and I hear that sense of trying to reflect things that work in and taking that to places where there is a real crisis, that's not new. If you look at the Benedictine tradition, if you look at what they were doing there, they were very much in Minster model mode, which is where you're taking people from a successful church and then taking that to plant a new church somewhere else. The Benedictines have been doing that for a very long time. And we remember that our parish system grew out of the monastic movements. Yeah, so there was actually the monastic houses is a picture of Scotland that actually it grew out of these very early pioneering missionary monks, nuns and friars. So I want to argue today that we in this context, we talk a lot about postmodernism, but I want to argue that we're now in a post-secular culture. I'm going to argue that it draws on something very similar to what was original medievalism. So I'm going to argue that we live in a kind of neo-medievalism in the mixed ecology. So all of us, I think, have to attend to these little snippets of different people groups with different perspectives in all our contexts. And some of that's pagan, spiritual, not religious. Some of that still driven by rational atheism. There's still a strong sense of the religion in the public square where Christians are also represented. There's a sense of those who feel very disaffected and angry and feel isolated, which are your nuns. And there are those who are indifferent consumers who get their identity from consumption and participating in our consumerist society. Increasingly, we're seeing in an ecological crisis, those who are very concerned about the need for activism around some of our big crises. So how do we attend to all of that? And I think that's part of the challenge. So how do we draw on different traditions and associated resources to relate to these different people groups in the reality of the challenge of this post-pandemic 21st century? And I think I want to argue that we shouldn't just dig with what we have today. We have the resources of 2000 years worth of resources, and whether that's drawing on the mendicants, the monastics, the Anglo-Catholic, the Protestant, the radical parish revivalist, all of them have played a part in church history. And how can we draw on this to inform what we're doing in the current? Now, I want to say something. I think we have a particular problem with some people who really focus on mission and neglect the type of ecclesial community or the lack of vision of what that ecclesial community looks like. Or we have people who are very obsessed about church and neglect what mission should look like. The key thing is, how do we build ecclesial communities out of contextual mission? And I want to draw on the work of Avery Dulles to inform our conversation. I'm going to be a bit provocative. So Avery Dulles talked about six different models of ecclesial community looking over church history. It started off when the church became the state religion of the Roman Empire, with the God as king and church as political society. In reaction to that, the monastics were horrified by that, so went into the desert to form desert monasticism. And there was a focus there of God as Trinity, and therefore church as spiritual fraternity. Then there was a sense of the importance of sacramentality, the sense of mystery, of contemplative prayer. And then we have the idea of church as sacramental. Then social justice and activism became a big thing, with a real focus then on church, Christ as servant. Then we have the sense of Christ the Word, the importance of kind of evangelism and of trying to get across the truth of the Christian gospel. And then last but not least, I think coming out of some of the stuff of the 20th century was the idea of Christ as teacher and the kind of church as learning community. All of those play a part, but I want to say that if we are trying to form ecclesial community as a contextual mission, we need to attend to what some of this is about. And if, particularly if we're thinking about a mixed ecology, I'm very aware. So this is kind of a church I was involved in the past. We're drawing on different parts of Avery Dulles' approach to the kind of the different forms of church with different forms of ecclesial community. So for example, I've seen Cafe Church drawing on a real strong sense of church as servant, Messy Church drawing on a mixture of sacramental and discipler, a church plant drawing on church as political society, spiritual not religious dialogue groups, and new monasticism drawing on church as sacramental. So I think we need to be attentive to the importance of what form of church is emerging out of mission, and not to neglect it, not think just because we get the mission right and then suddenly church will happen, it ain't going to. And then we'll have an impoverished expression of Christianity if we're not careful. Now, being really provocative, I kind of wanted to suggest that the different streams of pioneers are drawing on different imaginations of what they want the church to be out of context. And I want to argue that church planting draws heavily on church as disciple, church as political society. I think those of us working in the Fresh Expressions movement are drawing on what is in the middle there around church as servant, church as herald, spiritual frontier, church as discipler. And I want to say that social activists, kind of pioneer activists, are drawing heavily on church as servant with a bit of church as herald. I think we have to be honest, you know, because actually, if we don't honestly say what, you know, what form of church is emerging, then we might not get it right. And therefore, we might be great at mission, but not very good at forming new forms of ecclesial community drawing on the old. So what are some of the resources looking forward? And I'm going to suggest there are different resources for these different groups, these six different groups that we're talking about. Church as political society, you can turn to the Benedictine and the monastic movement was a very strong sense of that, planting new forms of church where those church kind of are the strong base to which the local community have reference to. We have to be a bit careful there about power play, but I think that's a really important part. So how can the local church, like at the old monasteries, look at being an infirmary, a hospital, education, refectory, with accessible worship. So I think there's something really important there about how can the church then build community where there might be lacking in community. Church as spiritual fraternity, and this is drawing heavily on the mendicant movement. So the idea of how can people draw on a rhythm of life to start thinking about mission and a way of being church? How can we draw on this rhythm of prayer and action, which I think Teze and related communities are really good examples of that, and other new monastic communities that I've been part of, and drawing on all these the fantastic resources, the Franciscan, Methodist, Carmelite and Dominican spirituality. Thinking about church as sacramental in terms of how that informs us in the present, there are literally huge resources within the Franciscan, the Ignatian, the Benedictine prayer traditions that we can draw on. And the idea then that mission is about catching up with what God is already doing by being mystically present. Loads of resources around liturgy and healing. That idea that God is restoring people back into right relationship with God is very strongly sacramental. So therefore, how do we help people get beyond their sense of wounding to let go of that sense of victimhood to be fulfilled as full human beings? The whole alternative worship community, I think, has resources here. Things like labyrinths, incredibly powerful ways of engaging with this. And importantly, the kind of engaging with the kind of Celtic Christian prayer and liturgy and resources of that tradition, which is particularly important, I think, in Wales, the Midlands and North of England, which others on this panel can talk to. I think church as servant, again, the sense of radical church of justice, you know, the Jesuits have got huge resources in doing this and how they do that residentially. The Franciscans, Anglican as well as other Franciscans, living this out in our city centres, radically bringing a kind of new ecclesial community. Salvation Army and their resources. And importantly for me, liberation theology and that kind of base ecclesial communities come out of this empowerment, giving voice to the poor to be a church in their own right. Church as herald, I think this is kind of classic more evangelism around engaging with people where they're looking for truth. I'm not sure everybody's doing that these days, given the complexity of our context, but for those where it's appropriate, the idea of apologetics, evangelism, discipleship courses, and that focus on prophetic engagement. And finally, church as discipler. How do we enable people to understand the faith? People think they know the faith, but actually think in reality they don't. So how do we help people go much deeper with living the Christian faith? Not just a head knowledge, I think this model's talking about, but something of the heart so that it's transformative as a way of life. So, you know, some people have maybe learned a bit at school and know some facts about God, but that's quite different from a kind of living relationship with God and being guided. So there's huge resources here from kind of mentoring, church, this Ignatian forms of retreat. Again, that's another ancient resources. The whole 12-step movement, I think, is really fascinating, where, you know, the 12-step fellowships offer a kind of formation and healing. So what can we do as churches, disciples, to draw on that? And importantly, that I think the importance of baptism and confirmation as important waymarks for the faith. So I want to, after all of that, you know, drawing on this really ancient way of thinking, you know, that we can look to the past, look at what other people have done before this. And we remember that the church has had 8 major epochs of crisis to this point. So it's part of our life to try and think through the crises that we face. And we must remember this pandemic is another one, coupled with all that was going on before it, with Brexit and all the rest of it. So in that context, what are the contextual things that we can draw on for that? So I want to just quote these questions. I just need to move so I can see the board. So what are the contextual dynamics that relate? Yeah, what models of church to assist you? What are you drawing on around authentic and relevant ecclesial community? As I said, it can't just be about doing mission. What are we trying to birth? And it can't just be about joining in with what already exists, all right? Because we know from research that doesn't work, because the bridge is too far to bridge people from mission initiatives to expressions of church. So how can we birth new expressions of church? And what ancient resources can we draw on to, and particularly these ideas of models of church coming out of church tradition, what can we draw on to build authentic and contextual and deep missional communities for today? So those are the two questions I want to leave on that race. And just to say, if you're interested in having this handout, there is a copy of it. You should be able to get hold of that as well as see this video. So let me leave you with those two questions. And I think that's exactly 15 minutes.
That is fantastic, Ian. Thank you so much. There was such a wealth of kind of amazing resources in there. I could see lots of people on the chat going, I can't get this down quickly enough, there's too much good stuff. So do be aware that this recording is going to be made available on the CCX Media website, and of course all the slides are going to be available there as well. So anybody who was just not able to get things down quickly enough, don't worry about that at all. Thank you so much for that, Ian, that was brilliant. What we're going to do now is we're going to go over to David first and then Mark, and just hear a couple of minutes of your own reflections on what Ian has said and some of the stuff that you want to bring to this seminar. And then we're going to take questions. So this is your moment, delegates, to put your questions in the chat. We would love to know, what do you want to know about combining the ancient and the new? What do you want to know about what historical wisdom can teach us about how we do mission and how we do church today? So put your questions in the chat. And we'll go straight over to David first and then Mark, and let's hear a little bit about what you have to reflect on.
Ian, that was absolutely brilliant. I could keep on listening to you rather than myself, but very quickly, 3 points, and I'll try and keep it to a minute each. The first, you know, when you were talking about, you know, the ancient traditions and drawing on that, as well as within, you know, older early church and more recent church history, it always strikes me as really helpful going back to the Council of Jerusalem, where you had significant culture clash, and we can't minimize that for those from the Hebrew background. But, you know, from that, where they had to recognize, one, the incredible wildness of God, who was way ahead of them. Then secondly, the fact that church at its core were a gift of relationships through Jesus, not necessarily practices. Practices built up the relationships. And then thirdly, the mutual, not just appreciation. They didn't just say, oh, that's great, away you go and do it. They encouraged one another. They appreciated one another. The folks from Jerusalem went down with Paul and Barnabas. There was a genuine love and appreciation and mutual support. And I think our tradition, ancient, goes way, way back, you know, and to that point. And that strikes me as a real helpful, you know, biblical anchor for the various things you were saying. Linked to that, something in Scotland we found useful was thinking at how the different expressions of church that you so helpfully draw out for us, how they may relate, particularly if perhaps a parish church or whatever is thinking of initiating a project. And they might say, well, how do we keep relating? What about things such as accountability or identity? What do those things mean? And when in Scotland, we were organizing, say, a national conference, say, in Edinburgh, and somebody from Dundee said, oh, I'm from Dundee. Somebody from the Orkney Islands said, I'm from Orkney. But when we were in Orkney, they wouldn't say they were from Orkney. They'd say they were from Hoy or Papa Westry or Sandy or whatever. And that didn't deny the common governance and the common identity, but it celebrated the particular. And again, when you were there, you see a mutual celebration and appreciation. It isn't as if everything is hubbed around the main island. There's toing and froing, and there's intentional, good and appropriate communication. And I can see how, as you were saying, within one model, you could have different expressions and forms of church within the one parish area, and it can work. And the third thing, very briefly, was the point you were making about, in one of them, the church's discipler. And again, in looking at the fresh expressions, little, you know, development. And I think often we can balk at what discipleship means. We think we can listen, we can serve, but how do we disciple? And I think we forget that discipling is something which is intrinsic from the beginning of any relationship, if we are Christ's and we are in a relationship. It's a bit like, you know, two people in a party, and when they bump into one another, whatever's in their glass is going to spill out. Just in the living of life, whatever is within us will spill out. And we hope that will be the Spirit of God. So there will be an intrinsic, I think, discipling, shaping going on from the very start, which of course will become more intentional when we develop, I think, a culture of discipleship where we are mutually accountable and where we understand the integrity of one another as we wish to walk in the Spirit and with Christ. Well, Emily, did I do it for 3 minutes?
Brilliant. Thank you so much, David. I totally agree. And I love your kind of emphasis on relationship. All of the models that Ian shared started with Jesus and all he is to us. You know, Christ as such and such, Christ as such and such. And that relationship with him and one with one another is really key. So thank you so much for that. Mark, what were your reflections on what Ian had to say?
Well, can I start with a story? And thank you, Ian, for so much depth. As there always is with what you present. But just to start with a story, when we moved to Telford back in 2004, 2005, we managed to attract a lot of media coverage, and we carried with us a headline from the Telegraph and the Guardian that was a missionary to godless Telford. And the reason that we carried that with us was that Telford had then one of the lowest church attendances. I think it was the second lowest church attendance in the UK, about 1.3% of the population. But then during the process of moving, I was down at my father's house. He was retiring, and I was helping him clear his bookshelves. And as we were moving books off, a map fell off the bookshelf. And it was an English heritage map to religious monuments in the UK. And so just as we were about to move to Telford, my eyes were drawn to Shropshire. And there on top of Telford was a little drawing, a stone plaque that said the Shropshire Monastic Trail. So I began to look into that and discovered that Telford, this godless place, was actually ringed with monastic communities from all sorts of ages. And we began to sort of dig into that sense of, well, okay, so if it's godless in the way that we see it, what's the ancient, what's the spirituality of place and the story, the theology of place and the history of that? We're often quick to look sideways at models and practices, but actually, what if we delve deep into the culture and we discovered a theology of place and a tradition and a story? And as we began to dig deeper, we found not only this history, incredible history of religious community, but also an amazing history of mission with people like John and Mary Fletcher doing radical mission amongst some of the mining communities in the Industrial Revolution. So my kind of reflection is that, you know, we as those who've grown through modernity and into post-modernity, we can think about culture in an evolutionary way. We've reached the pinnacle. We've got the answers that are relevant for today. And in doing so, we can often miss that depth of history and story and learning that there is going back through the ages, particularly when we start to think about place and about where we are, the culture, the myths, the legends, the theology and the spirituality of our place and of where we are. So for me, I guess, you know, there are two ways of looking at this. There's probably lots, but one is to work out, well, you know, we're thinking about what models might be relevant. But my instinct is to be thinking, well, actually, what ways of expressing Christian community and Christian mission are resonant, and how do they flow with that spirit of place and that story? So, you know, Ian is thinking very, you know, quite globally in terms of this history and that story of the Christian spirituality, Christian mission and ecclesial community. And I want to put that alongside this sense of understanding what is our history and where we are and what story does that bring. John Shea, in his work on narrative theology, talks about bringing our stories, our traditions, our wisdom, our experience, our theology into a conversation with the story of where we are and the people where we are, and actually looking at how those stories interact and what new learning and new wisdom do we get from that interaction and that conversation between story. So I think that's, that for me, there's something about that synthesis of the ancient and the now, which actually might lead into somewhere new, which is creative and dynamic and a different place.
Thank you so much for that, Mark. That's brilliant. I think that would be a great place to start, actually. I can see lots of questions being posted in the question and answer, which is great. And I think that what you've just said, Mark, there would be a great place to start, because I think for a lot of people, when they're starting to think about how to draw on some of these ancient ways of understanding ourselves as churches and the places that we are, we need to start with reading our context and kind of understanding what we're seeing in a place, whether it's somewhere we've moved to that's new or somewhere that we have lived for a long time. So I'd love to know, panelists, what are your thoughts on how we can read our own context? What are your kind of go-to tools for doing that? Who'd like to go first? Ian, Brill.
I think practically is about getting out there. I mean, it's got to be relational. You can't work. It's, I think too often, you know, like developers, if they look trying to develop a building, they would go and look at statistics and they'll do all of that. Mm-hmm. But I think our responsibility as Christians is to go whole, you know, prayerfully listen to God speaking through people's lives and the sort of people, their questions, where they're coming from. You know, my experience of it around here at the moment, people are very angry and disconnected and are really frightened about the future. So how can we listen to that, engage with it? So for me, the relationality, you know, Jesus, what did he do? The gospel is full of Jesus walking around the Holy Land and munching with all sorts of outsiders. So I think there's something about doing that. You know, how can we be guests of others, listen to what their story is about, their hopes, their dreams? That's what we should be doing, I think.
Fantastic. David, Mark, anything to add to that? Yeah, David, go for it.
Yeah, a couple of things. I mean, totally agreeing with the relational and the priority of that, rather than just being, you know, statistical. I think, though, it is worth remembering that sort of global and societal trends will affect the local. And as part of our listening, I think it's really good to look at what is happening in our wider culture. So, for example, I remember recently reading some reviews of films that were made, say, in the last 20 years, and they were looking quite critically at some of the sexism of films that were incredibly popular. And at the end of the article, the person saying, well, I hope now that somebody in the writer's room would ask, do we really need that scene of sex and violence? And the way women were in particular treated. And it's really interesting. There can be relatively quick cultural nuances which affect us locally. So that's worth looking at. I think the second thing, just picking up maybe particularly what Ian was saying, when we're looking at the local, and again, it links in, I think, with so much that you've said, Ian, is what aspect in particular is this community crying out to hear regarding the good news of Jesus? Now, we want to bring the whole picture, but I know one community I was working in, fear, real fear, was a significant issue. And therefore, you think, well, now, okay, what does the good news mean in this? This is something we need to address, and then we begin to open other things.
That's brilliant. Thank you so much. Yeah. Mark, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I think echoing what Ian was saying about getting out there, and I think that sense for us in our community of being a pilgrim community that's about deep listening. We're very good at listening for our words, our language. We're very good at listening so that we can respond. But actually that deep level of listening where we're hearing the myths, the legends, we're hearing the cries, we're hearing the joys and the sorrows of a community, and understanding, well, where is God in that? You know, whether we're talking about the sort of Vincent Donovan sense of hearing the God stories in language and culture, or it's the apostolic and prophetic of hearing the voice of God on those streets. And I think for me, this is where I've discovered something of the ancient practice of saying that contemplative practice of deep listening, of breathing deep in community, Christian community, but also the community in which we live, is a slow and contemplative practice that's about understanding, not simply listening for clues and cues, but a deep understanding of people and of place and of that story. So for me, that slowness and that walking of the streets, I'm always struck by you know, Chad and Aidan, who were constantly given horses by the bishop, and they sold their horses so they could walk the streets and feel the ground underneath their feet. And for me, that's a really deep spiritual and missional practice, to feel the ground underneath my feet.
Yeah, fantastic. That deep listening, I think, is something that maybe our culture isn't always very good at. We often, you know, things are very fast paced and there's a lot of surface stuff. And so I think that is such a key skill for anybody in church planting or forming new communities to do. That's brilliant. We've got loads of questions coming in, which is absolutely brilliant. We've got quite a few around how some of this stuff can be worked out practically, how we can incorporate some of these traditions into church life these days. We've even had one question asking about are people going to even see this as relevant? So I would love to hear from our panelists some stories of examples where you've seen ancient traditions really well kind of resourcing the local church. Yeah, Ian, go for it.
So when I was involved in birthing the MOOC community, we had no idea what it was going to be. That started as engaging with a bunch of spiritual, not religious people, and de-church people, with kind of conversations in a pub. And then I was just so at lost about, okay, so how do you take a discussion group in a pub to try and work out how that be, you know, it was being missional, but I had no idea how that was going to shift to becoming an ecclesial community at all. So it was kind of stuck. And then I met up with someone who said to me, have you ever thought about a rhythm of life? as a way of approaching. I thought, I have no idea what a rhythm of life is. And at that stage, I had no understanding of new monasticism. It was someone else who talked about that. And then as I explored that, it took life. Do you know what I mean? So there's something about, I think it's really important not to do the sausage machine thing, which is like, oh, I like this mission and I like this model of church, and I'm going to try and force those two things to happen. I think this is where the dependence, and I think what Marcus just said is right, the dependence on God in prayer and patience to see what is being unsettled. It might be that people want to eat together and that develops a sacramentality out of eating together. See what I mean? You don't know. I think that's about giving space for God to lead. I think so too much as missionaries, sometimes we think we have to have all the answers. And sometimes there's a danger that we kind of speak for an absent God. But actually, I think if we are patient and listen to what God is unsettling, then the kind of type of church will emerge through the questions and the things that come out of them. So MOOC became a new monastic community, not because I knew anything about new monasticism, but because that's what God unsettled to happen.
Fantastic. It links a little bit to what David was saying before about the wildness of the spirit and where he leads. I love that. Mark, yeah, go for it.
I want to just use a little illustration from somebody who I know quite well, who is currently just beneath me on the screen, Mr. Mobsby down there, because I went years ago and spent some time with Ian in London just hanging out, and went along to a thing that they were running in the church called Stressed in the City. And for me, that was really inspiring, because there they were, right in this, the heart of the city of London, where stress and pressure and the need to produce and the daily grind and all of that, and that incredible pressure that there was in that place. And in the midst of that, MOOC were running a series of Ignatian exercises at lunchtime and creating a space of peace and stillness and contemplation in the heart of perhaps the least still peaceful and contemplative place in Britain. And for me, that was not only a wonderful service to the people of the community, but it was a real beacon of a different way of being. And for me, that's one of the things that we've reflected on, actually. What does it mean to be to have a different way of being? I tried that in some of the, and I've tried that over the years in places like the football club here in Telford, where we said, well, actually, what does it mean to be servants and peacemakers, to be mendicants in a football club? And how do we live that? And that started off really with just going and having a conversation. I remember speaking to the chairman of the football club and saying, Jesus sent out the 72 and told them to offer peace. Well, I'm here to offer peace. What does peace look like for Telford United Football Club? And that's where we begin with that story of peace. So understanding that we're not offering consumer things that people can go, oh, I fancy that. We're actually, what we're talking is ministering to the deep need of people in that community.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Mark. We're going to need to come into land shortly. David, do you want to give us some concluding thoughts before we do that?
Oh, right. I was just going to give an example.
Oh, well, feel free.
Let me, maybe it can be a concluding thought as well. I'm thinking, going back to the point, Ian, as you were saying, the church is discipler. One group that I know that was working with, like really marginalized youth in terms of those that were on the edge of their own community, and then they gathered in the city center, and a group that was working with them. And this whole point of discipleship, moving away from curriculum or input, and even if there were things and behaviors that, oh my goodness, say, well, no, as you listen to God, what is going on in the person's life? And the idea just of walking with them, but with that intentionality of helping them see the wonder of the gift of love in Jesus Christ and what that might mean, without the pressure, but also it meant for that group taking a lot of flack, both sometimes from the community, but actually sometimes from the wider church or other streams that didn't quite get what they were doing. And if I had to make a concluding remark, it's from my time in Spain. And the way we would say, if we were saying farewell, as we will in a moment or two, would say goodbye, which comes from that idea of God be with you. They had this wonderful phrase, which isn't used much now, but it was vaya con Dios, which wasn't may God go with you, but may you go with God. And I think our whole story from creation to whatever is ahead of us in Christ is may we go with God. And that really, really excites me. That's the adventure.
Amen to that, David. Thank you so much. We are going to have to come into land there. I can't believe it. We have so much more that we could talk about. And I want to say a huge, huge thank you to our speaker and panelists, and to you listening and watching for the questions that you have brought. There has been so much wisdom and insight in this seminar that it's just been an absolute joy to be part of. So feel free to show your appreciation for our wonderful panelists in the chat. They have just been brilliant. So thank you so much, David, Mark and Ian. You have just brought us so much. Just to let you know what's coming up next on this stream, we have Lusa Ngoy, Harvey Kwiani and Adam Martin speaking on intercultural planting. They'll be presenting a vision of communities which bring together people of different races and cultural backgrounds, and exploring why this is important, what the challenges are, and how we can do this well. Alternatively, you're welcome to hop onto one of our other 9 streams. There is a wide variety of fascinating seminars for you to choose from. And what we'll do now is we'll have a few minutes intermission before we kick off our next slot at 2:20. So sit back, enjoy all we have in store for you during the break. It's a great opportunity for a comfort stop too, if you need that. So we'll be back at 2:20, and a huge, huge, huge thank you to our panelists. It has been a joy to be with you. You're welcome to log off now, and we'll see the rest of our delegates in a few minutes.